Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by John Stephanopoulos, the founder and CEO of FutureBit, a Brooklyn-based Bitcoin miner working on bespoke hardware for the home and office. It's a great ideological conversation talking about the ethics of home mining versus the mega miners we see floating around the United States and elsewhere today. We want to push people to go and check out blockspace.media. You can go check out our newsletter there, sign up for a simple form, get great content to your inbox twice per week that way. Okay, a few shout outs to our sponsors before we jump into the conversation. First to Foreman Mining, which you'll hear about more later in the show. And then also to Gator Mining and Upstream Data, which you will hear from next. Okay, on to the conversation.
Want to mine Bitcoin? Gator Mining offers premium hosting with as low as one unit per client. 95% uptime guaranteed, no curtailment, 24/7 monitoring and maintenance, in-house certified repair center. Clean and renewable energy, all at competitive market rates. Work with an individualized team to get hash rate flowing your way today. Gator Mining, pioneering trustworthy crypto hosting for optimal mining success. Contact Gator Mining today at gatormining.ca.
Bitcoin miners, be prepared. Hash rate is moving upstream towards power plants and low-value energy. Don't get cut off. Modernize and mobilize your Bitcoin mining fleet today with Upstream Data's high-performance load centers. Plug in Upstream Data's hash hut and monetize surplus wind power reliably in the blistering heat of West Texas. Plumb in hash generators and safely convert natural gas into cash in the frigid winters of northern Canada. Upstream offers high-quality load centers that will help you mine Bitcoin safely and reliably in every application and climate. Mobilize today and start mining upstream at upstreamdata.com.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by John Stephanopoulos, the founder of FutureBit. We've been giving away some FutureBit Apollo 1 units, so it's cool to get John on. And they just launched a new product over the holidays. So John, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Yeah, so let's dive into all things FutureBit. Of course, you guys have one of the more ideological products out there, which is why I was excited to bring you guys on, which is sort of unpacking all the things that you guys have been doing. What is FutureBit? How'd you get into the space? All those super basic intro podcast questions.
Yeah, so our whole mission of the company is to decentralize the hash rate and get as many people involved in the base layer of Bitcoin as possible, and doing it in a way where anybody that is not even tech savvy can get into it and actually run a full node and participate in mining. So that was kind of like the genesis of the company. I personally founded the company back in 2015 because, as you can see, I'm in New York City, lived in a studio apartment. And back then, was about the time that the big, you know, Bitmains, and it's pretty much the only Bitmain back then anyway, stopped producing home mining hardware. I would say the S5, S6 was like the last line in Bitmain where it was like sub 1,000 watts where you could, you know, reasonably run something like that in your house. And then there was like a lot of other companies in the space around then that were building, you know, home-based devices, but they either all went bankrupt or went out of business because, you know, they couldn't deliver the product. After all those companies left, Bitmain decided to go full, you know, corporate and mining farm and just, you know, serve a few customers and send out thousands of units, which, you know, in a hardware mining business makes sense. So there was a huge void in hardware for home users. And that's kind of where I was like, you know, this is not how Bitcoin was designed to be run. And I kind of stepped in and started with a bunch of little USB miners. That's how the company started. We actually took a bunch of ASICs from a defunct ASIC company, took all their ASICs, took all their design stuff, all their bankruptcy stuff, and kind of started the company around that. And, you know, it slowly grew from there. We're completely grassroots, pretty much do zero marketing, zero VC funding. It's all customers buying our product and slowly growing through there. And that's kind of how I've been able to keep the core principles of the company alive. Otherwise, you know, there's a lot of pressure in the space to do other things. And that's the only way I've been able to navigate that and stay true to the mission of trying to change Bitcoin and get as many people involved as possible.
How do you go about the marketing stuff? I'm interested on that note, maybe just because I work in that land. For a product like this, it probably has, I don't know how high R&D costs, but some R&D costs. And then you're putting out a product that you need people to buy. How do you think about it? Is it just like mostly word of mouth or continuing to put out a good product and people are purchasing it?
Yeah. It's been 100% grassroots from the beginning. We've just slowly grown our customer base through each era of product, gotten more customers involved. Those customers, you know, tell their friends and family, and we just have been growing organically since then. And each time we do a product introduction, you know, our mix of new customers versus old is usually like 60-40. So it's mostly our old customers buying products or upgrade. And, you know, we've been barely able to keep up with demand just through that. So, you know, doing a broader marketing for new customers is what we're, you know, what we're going to be doing in the next year to grow the company. But we need to get our manufacturing up and supply up before we can do that. So that's kind of like the focus of next year, is kind of getting Bitcoin outside of the general Bitcoin enthusiast market, which is what we've been catering to for the past couple of years, and getting it into, you know, the people that have, let's say, bought Bitcoin on Coinbase and that's all they know about it. You know, we want to market to these people and be like, here's the other world of Bitcoin and why Bitcoin is so important for the financial freedom of the world and why you should be running these systems in your house. So that's kind of the next phase of growth for us.
Okay, so we'll definitely get into the ideological side on that, because I, for one, enjoy it. And as a former home miner who kind of got burnt on electrical costs, I want to hear more about it. Let's talk about the new product you guys just put out and talk about the evolution of products that came before it. So you guys just launched, I believe it was the Apollo 2 that came out. Yeah, or can you just rebrand it?
Right there.
Right there. Love it. Yes. Yeah, so tell me about the unit.
Yeah, so here, for your audience that's watching, I'll show it off a little bit. So this is the Apollo 2. It's a little 6-inch block. It's nice on your desk.
Yeah, I like the feel and look of it.
Yeah, so we wanted to... Our original Apollo was kind of like a more industrial look, so we were like, okay, for this product... we want to make it look like something anybody can place on their desk and not feel intimidated by it. So this was our, you know, original Apollo product. And just so for a size comparison, you know, it's...
Oh yeah, it's about twice as big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So the big change for the Apollo 2 is we integrated the power supply in the unit. And we doubled the output of it. So what we found with the original Apollo was most people were buying two or more. So, and kind of going back to you know, what you mentioned in terms of power bills and why a lot of people get turned off of mining. When we launched the original Apollo, we chose a target wattage of 100 watts on purpose, because that's was the wattage level where most people wouldn't see an impact on their power bill. So it was, you know, a sub $5 addition to your power bill. And most people wouldn't shut down the device just because their power bill goes, you know, $5 more each month. So our goal was, okay, let's build a device where no matter what the Bitcoin price is, people continue to mine and support the network, regardless of what the economics of it was, because, you know, no one's going to care about an extra couple dollars a month on their power bill. So with Apollo 2, you know, we found out that most people actually were running 2 anyway. So we upped the power output to double. So the Apollo 2 comes with an integrated 500 watt power supply. So it hashes between 200 to 400 watts and about 6 to 10 terahash of hash rate. And uses the latest 5 nanometer node. So it's about 30 watts per terahash range in terms of efficiency. And then the big software feature that we've added to it is our solo stratum pool feature. So what a lot of home miners do with lower end devices is they solo mine. So they point it to a solo pool where instead of, you know, gaining, let's say 500 satoshis a day, and hoping that you accumulate enough where the transaction fees are to a point where you can actually pay out, which would take, you know, even with our device would take over a year to do. What a lot of people do instead is just point it to a solo pool and hope they hit a 6 Bitcoin block, which is a cool way of supporting the network, because at the end of the day, what we care about is having as much hash power out there, creating free uncensorable blocks. So whether that block is found through a single solo miner or through a solo pool, it's all the same thing in my mind at the end of the day. So the more solo blocks that we have being found out there, or the better it is for the network. And this is kind of like a cool incentive way for people to run these small devices on their desk, because instead of, you know, thinking, oh, I'm just only making a couple satoshis a day, here's a little lottery miner where I have, you know, 100 times the chance of hitting a block than finding, you know, the Powerball, let's say, a daily chance. And it's just a way cooler incentive of running small machines. And that's kind of like what the trend has been over the last couple of years with small mining devices. So the software that we're including with Apollo 2, and that's also going to be able to be run on the original Apollos, is bringing that solo pool functionality directly into the device. So what you're essentially doing is running a whole Stratum solo server on your own personal device. So that means that device itself is solo mining onto your own personal node. But the cool part is you can also point any hash that you have to that device as well. So let's say you're a small miner that has, you know, 10 S19s. You can point those S19s instead to a pool. You can point it to your own personal pool that solo mines directly to your node. So it's the first time that something like this has been available in a plug-and-play fashion for people that aren't technical. So we're excited for it. And we think 2024 is going to be the first year someone's going to find a solo block on a personal device, which has not happened since, you know, the original Satoshi days. So that's going to be a threshold moment in the history of Bitcoin. So we're excited about it.
That'd be quite the windfall to get 60 before the halving, especially if you crank that one.
Yeah,
out.
Because, like, you know, you hear all the news when someone finds a solo block on a solo pool, and that's super cool and rare. But when someone finds it on their own personal device running their own node, that's going to be I think a beautiful moment for Bitcoin.
Just like turning on your monitor and seeing that you have a 6.25 Bitcoin in your wallet.
Right.
Pretty incredible. Tell me a little bit about like how you think customers think about the economics for a unit like this and how you think about it as well. Because there's a price point for a machine, there's a payback period. To me, when I look at something like this, I think it's more like an ideological thing. Like, I want to mine Bitcoin. I want to be a part of the network. This is the most simple way to onboard. And so I'd go ahead and purchase stuff. And I've done like that kind of stuff in the past. But it might be possible with like the low joules per terahash and things like that to think about a payback period. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we get this a lot, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, the criticism and of our company is that, you know, we sell unprofitable, expensive devices. And that's not what our market is or who we are targeting to. We're targeting it to people that have started to dive deeper into Bitcoin and starting to understand it more and want to participate in the base layer of Bitcoin. And there's no hardware out there that is plug and play that allows you to have the full ecosystem on your desktop. So that's kind of the value add that we bring to the product. It's a plug and play device. I personally think of it as a Bitcoin node first, that includes a small miner as an incentive to run that node. That's kind of how I think of our product. My main mission is to bring millions of nodes online, and through the miner incentive of doing that. And that's what a lot of our customers, that buy the product, you know, they're interested in running the node. And a cool way to you know, have a little space heater that also mines and accumulates a little bit of Bitcoin. And most of our customers come, you know, we have very few questions on ROI when people buy our product. And we even steer our customers away when they do ask that. We're like, you should do a little more research. This is not for you. We're not the type that will sell the product just to sell it. We want you to understand Bitcoin and understand what you are buying before you buy it. And that's kind of our stance on it. And a lot of people are getting it, and a lot of more people are waking up to the whole mining revolution that we kind of spearheaded. And there's a lot of new companies popping up, doing what we're doing with different hardware and different ways of doing it. And it's really cool to see. People are getting excited about, bring hash power back to homes. And there's a lot of ways to do it. We're just one way of doing it. And, we need a lot more companies than just FutureBit doing it, in order to get to the point where there's enough hash rate out there producing free uncensorable blocks, competing with the huge miners out there that control, you know, over 75% of the hash rate right now.
Yeah.
Hey listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Foreman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Foreman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Foreman, you get a system that scales with your business. Inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Foreman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Foreman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit foreman.mn. With Foreman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Yeah, let's go back to the product really quickly, and then let's dive in back into that part on the mining centralization. So what has been the product development from 2015 onwards, and how'd you kind of get to this point with the Apollo 2?
So we started off with these little USB miners. So just sold most of our products that we sold in terms of volume were those USB miners. We sold over 50,000 of those when we started between 2015 and 2018. And that kind of funded the R&D on the Apollo, which was a much larger endeavor. We had to design, we partnered with a company to design the ASIC and partnered with them to build that first 14 nanometer ASIC that we used in the original Apollo, which took a lot of money, a lot of resources. Building a hardware startup is not easy. But, you know, we're a super small and lean team. The core team is just five people that builds the whole product. And that's how we've been able to survive three bear markets, so far. And we have done the big, you know, marketing splashes of selling, you know, million units that we can't deliver. We've delivered every single product that we've sold, and that's kind of how, we've stayed alive and continued to grow. We grow slowly, but that's how, so I like doing things and how we keep the company and vision alive for the long term. So, you know, we've got a super long-term goal and we're slowly building ourselves to that goal and we're excited about it.
Definitely. So I guess that's the counter is you guys are growing slow versus some of these public miners that are growing like weeds. I mean, 2 years ago, it was a single digit percentage, or maybe 3 or 4 years ago, single digit percentage of public miners in the US. And now it's like around 30% of the hash rate. The reason for that obviously is like public money, like fiat money coming into the system. A lot of these teams are taking advantage of that. What are like your concerns with the centralization of mining, maybe in the States or just in general, for those who are probably not super familiar with that argument?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main concern, and you know, it's kind of come to light this year more, and people are starting to recognize it more, is the problem of centralization with these big farms. So most of these companies are publicly traded companies, first of all. So, you know, their first duty is to their shareholders and not Bitcoin. And number two, they're all centralized entities with centralized, facilities. So, you know, there's no decentralization aspect in terms of block creation with these companies. All these blocks, as far as I'm concerned, are centralizable, and we've seen where, you know, pools plus the companies involved with the pools have censored blocks. They're, you know, that whole F2 pool fiasco a couple weeks ago is an example of that. And my fear is that this will continue to proliferate in the centralized mining aspect of block creation. And there needs to be a counter to that. I'm not saying it's all bad. I'm not saying all these companies are not Bitcoiners or they're not working towards making Bitcoin a free and uncentralizable asset. But we have to make sure there's enough hash power to counter that. So, you know, let's say a bunch of pools are, you know, the government comes in and says, okay, these transactions or these transactions coming from these countries, you have to censor. They're not, you know, sure they can do that, but they can't stop other miners from including those transactions in their blocks. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. So we're building a device where you can point your hash directly to it, find blocks, and, you know, you can choose what node software you want to run on it. You can choose what transactions you want to accept. But most people will run, you know, the base Bitcoin core setup. And you know, the point is that there's going to be enough of those blocks created where even if you are living in a country where it's censored, you'll be able to get your transaction into that block eventually. And that's kind of, you know, what the purpose of what we're trying to do is. And you know, that's the purpose of decentralization. That's why we need a lot more participants on the network. It can't be just, you know, four major pools controlling over 75% of the hash rate. There has to be at least, you know, 50% of the hash rate being something other than that. And that's why we need a lot more companies other than us doing this. So we're going to be helping accelerate that this year. So we'll have some cool announcements in the next year where we're going to be opening up our hardware platform for more startups. So we'll take out that initial, you know, 10 to 20 million you need to, you know, get stuff like this going, and offer just, you know, our base hardware out there for people to integrate into other, systems and ways of mining at home. So that's going to be cool in the future, and, got a lot more stuff in our pipeline that will accelerate all of this.
Yeah, definitely a lot of questions, I got for you about home mining solutions or micro mining solutions. Going back to the block template thing, that obviously came pretty into the conversation on at least on Twitter and other spots because of what happened with Ocean Mining, and they gave out like block template structures they can use now, which is interesting. Then also with F2 pool choosing to censor some transactions. Tell me a little bit about that coming into the light. How long have you kind of had that thesis that pools and miners were going to start implementing those things, and how do you think that changes with the introduction of inscriptions and ordinals into the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking about this since, you know, 2015, and you know, back then there was a Bitcoin can do no wrong type of mentality across the community, and nobody would, you know, acknowledge it. And now it's reached the point where they can't ignore it anymore. So, you know, there's obvious factions within and outside of Bitcoin trying to do damage to Bitcoin for obvious reasons. And people, you know, can't ignore that fact anymore. So whether which side you stand on the principle end of things, you have to recognize that there is damage going on to Bitcoin and the usability of it. And people, you know, my mission is to get that out there and have people decide where they want Bitcoin to go. You know, that's, it shouldn't be up to a bunch of companies and pools deciding that. You know, people should understand the complexities of the issues and understand what the trade-offs are for what's going on in the ecosystem, and choose a path for Bitcoin that makes the most sense for the people and for free and non-centralized money. That should be the beacon that's guiding everybody in Bitcoin. But unfortunately, you know, when there's this much money involved, that gets lost. And if we don't get back to the principles of why Bitcoin was created in the first place, what's the point? What's the point if BlackRock and Vanguard start taking millions of Bitcoin into their custody, control, you know, a majority of the hash rate through these proxies, and then Bitcoin becomes a bank 2.0. And that's a very, very easy reality to become in the future if we don't counter that. You know, that's my big prediction that I'm sure I'll get a lot of heat of. Like I got a lot of heat talking about, you know, just basic censorship stuff years ago. But, you know, this has to, you know, more people need to realize this, that that's what's going on, and need to stand up for what they want to fight for Bitcoin to be in the future. So, yeah.
So you definitely present like a home mining solution or a micro mining solution. What do you think about the argument that Bitcoin mining does have some aspects of it that enable it to decentralize pretty well in an industrial sense, where you can have like low energy and be mining from Latin America or be mining in Russia? I mean, even this year or last year now, we saw Russia's hash rate resurge and grow a lot, right? And so now if we have like Russian miners and they're still under those sanctions, yet we also have these publicly listed miners, we kind of have like this perfect conflict between enemies where they have to like kind of work together and they can't really change much with the ecosystem. Do you think that's like a possible scenario to play out? And are you unhappy with that scenario kind of playing out where we do have kind of like a cold war with inside Bitcoin, but it leads to kind of a stalemate and no censorship?
Right. I mean, that's kind of what's holding things together right now is that type of competition between the big miners, let's say. So, you know, there's obviously more ideological minded big miners that are fighting censorship and others that, you know, once government tells them to do something, they'll do it. But my worry in that regard, and kind of like the nation state narrative of Bitcoin mining, where all these huge, you know, mining is no longer possible at all for any home miner, and it's all done by huge nation states and corporations. The problem with that is when it comes to corporations and nation states, they usually collaborate with each other, especially on important topics that they collaboratively control. So if there's huge powers controlling 90% of Bitcoin hash rate, they'll probably come to a consensus if it's only 100 entities controlling it, right? So that's my worry about that narrative playing out for Bitcoin mining. Because no matter what, it's going to be a couple hundred people making these decisions, and you can make decisions when there's only a couple hundred people involved. What we're trying to do, and the counter to that, is let's have a million people producing blocks. Sure, it's going to be one every day of those million producing a block. But as long as there's millions solo mining and producing blocks, there's no way there's going to be any consensus. sentence within those 1 million people, right? They're just going to do what's best for Bitcoin just on a principle basis of things, because they have no other incentive to do so other than I'm going to mine 6 or 3 Bitcoin. I want to be able to transact that Bitcoin. So I'm going to do what's best for that, you know, that reality, which will be make sure I don't censor any transactions. But when you have just 100 people controlling all of that, that gets thrown out the window.
From a hardware perspective, you guys are kind of managing that with this solution. And if you guys have enough numbers and there's other people like mining on like 1S19 at home and all that kind of thing, that's fantastic. On a software side, I think we're seeing that heat up right now, especially around block templates, where people are like, okay, most people use Bitcoin Core block templates. They don't really make any changes. Ocean is adding, like, I think they have 3 different. They have like the core, an Ocean inscriber feature, and then they have one that like purges inscriptions.
All right.
From your perspective, what is like the software side look like going forward? And we have Stratum V2 in the conversation with Demand just launching, Ocean's thing, Core in itself. How are you guys looking at the software? Where would you like to see it grow?
Yeah, I think on the software side, and I'm on the side of you're not going to be able to stop any type of, let's say, spam attack on Bitcoin, no matter what you do on software side. It's just the nature of how Bitcoin is designed. If you try to filter something out, they're going to figure out a new way to do it with a new mechanism. So it's super hard to fight this cat and mouse game of trying to filter transactions, trying to stop a certain type of transactions. While I don't agree with it, and I think Bitcoin should just be facilitating payment transactions, which is what it's designed for, and allowing someone from a not well off part of the world to be able to send $100 worth of Bitcoin. That takes 10% of your Bitcoin transaction fees to do right now. That's not great. But the reality is, block space is going to get more scarce. It's going to be harder to send transactions on chain, on direct chain. So on the software side of things, I think we need a big push on layer 2 solutions. Lightning is great, but there's a lot of drawbacks and things that need to be fixed, to make it super easy, for people to use. But there needs to be more robust layer 2 solutions and multiple layer 2 solutions. I love what the Fed guys are doing. That's another solution that could work out long term. But we have to understand that we're in the AOL days of Bitcoin. All these easy to use systems and UX designs are coming out now. Now is when, what the future of mass adoption and Bitcoin UI will look like going forward. So we're still super early, and I'm not really concerned about that part. I think the software will come out that will make it much easier for users to transact on layer 2s, and that will probably be the future for most of small-based payments transactions on Bitcoin network. But in terms of the mining side of things, there's a lot of stuff with Stratum V2 that's coming out. We'll probably be implementing that as well for people that, do want to mine to a pool, but have some sort of control over transactions being mined. There's a lot of cool stuff coming out, in the next few years that will facilitate a lot of, individual user, design and choices around what's being mined in the block.
I'm curious, since you brought it up, do you think that there should be like a soft fork in the future for introducing any of these L2 designs, or are you pretty happy with some of the solutions that don't necessarily need it, like a Fediment or a Cashew or even like a Botanic Lab Spider Chain?
I mean, if there's a design proposal where, here's a solution that's been tested and will work and will scale, I don't see an issue doing a soft fork to implement something like that.
Gotcha.
As long as it's been tested and there's big consensus around the Bitcoin community, like there was around SegWit and software proposals like that. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, one thing I'm kind of looking toward this year, and it's been like a prediction I've been kind of like pushing on the show, is that with the China mining ban, all these miners coming to the U.S. maybe for the first time, or just coming over and being in the U.S. or in the West, I should say, that means they're going to be more involved in the technical community. And I think that these miners are going to be more incentivized to give out options that are better for miners as opposed to like better for the network. And hopefully like those things cross over together. But from an L2 standpoint, there's definitely a few L2 solutions out there, like rollups or drive chains or whatnot, that would benefit miners more. And curious to see what happens with that going into 2024. Just to close out, wanted to get your thoughts on where people can find you, where people can go and purchase FutureBit machines, and anything else.
Yeah, so we do most of our sales right through our site. So it's futurebit.io. Pretty active on Twitter at FutureBit. That's our main handle. My handle's JStephanop1 on Twitter. Usually live on Twitter like everybody else. We do have a distributor in Europe as well. Trying to get more distributors, to make it as easy as possible for worldwide sales. So if you're in a country and doing tech type of, distribution, definitely reach out. We're definitely looking for that to grow our, overseas distribution sales.
Nice. Yeah. We definitely have some, well, we actually have listeners from every continent on this, but LATAM and Africa certainly come to mind as options for distributors. So if you're listening, give us a reach. Okay, John, thank you so much for the podcast. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully Bitcoin ETF goes through next week. And if you're listening to this, maybe not. I don't know. Your take is on the Bitcoin ETF. You gave me a little smirk there, so maybe you don't want it to happen.
Yeah, that's a whole other rabbit hole. So.
Another show then. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.